Well, hello and welcome to listeners on WSCS, WMNB, and WLSL. This is DJ Frederick, and you've stumbled into the Radio Thrift Shop. The Radio Thrift Shop is a work in progress. On any given week, you might hear folk, jazz, easy listening, indie music, forgotten 45s, and forays deep into the archives. So light up the lava lamp and come on a musical journey deep into the world of 78s, 33s, 45s, 8-track tapes, and cassettes. The Thrift Shop is open for musical exploration. And coming up on this edition of the Radio Thrift Shop, we have another album by Cal Jader with the Dave Brubeck Trio, so please stay tuned for that. In the interim, let's dig into the crates here at the Thrift Shop. We'll be right back.
rhyme poems. Nigger ain't no more, he's black, that's sure. That stole from me that whole world mystery I knew. Blow, Brother John, sweet memory, be a living thing.
We got a bit of a chill-out vibe happening on this edition of the Radio Thrift Shop. Archie Shepp with Mozambique. Before that, Plunky with Tropical Chill. I'd like to say thank you for joining us here at WSCS 90.9 FM in New London or online at classicalwscs.org. I'm here every Saturday evening from 10 p.m. until midnight. And these very homegrown, homemade shows are archived at radioforall.net.
Exploring science in the sea. Leopard seals are dangerous loners. They can be 10 feet long and weigh half a ton, and they sometimes attack people. They've killed at least one. Yet they've also been known to offer penguins to divers. Some have seen the gesture as a friendly gift, or perhaps an act of pity for a poor hunter. But British researchers recently came up with another possible explanation. The seal might be trying to get the diver to share a meal, an act that would make it easier for the seal to consume its dinner. The scientist examined video of 36 leopard seals at South Georgia Island in the far southern Atlantic Ocean. The seals were feeding on king penguins. Hunting in such a large group had never been seen before. Leopard seals usually hunt alone. Even more unusual, a few of the seals were sharing their dinner. Two seals would each be tearing at the penguin as they swam side by side. The researcher said that such behavior could be a case of go along to get along. With so much food around, it would take less energy to share a penguin than to fight for it, a fight that might leave one of the seals with nothing. On the other hand, the behavior could also be a form of deliberate cooperation. It would take less energy for two seals to work together to pull apart their prey than for one seal to thrash around until the penguin could be eaten. If that's the case, then when a leopard seal offers a penguin to a diver, it's not an outright gift. It's an invitation to share a meal. Science in the Sea is a production of the University of Texas Marine Science Institute. We're on the web at scienceandthesea.org. I'm Holly Brawley.
Frank Potenza with Waiting for You. Before that, Felbum with McTeen live at Paradiso Nord in Amsterdam. Well, this is DJ Frederick. You've stumbled into the Radio Thrift Shop. A little bit of a chill out vibe this evening, which we can all definitely use in these stressed out times. Our featured album here on the Thrift Shop this evening is the Dave Brubeck Trio with Cal Jader. This was recorded between September 1949 and June 1950 with Dave Brubeck on piano, Cal Jader on vibes, drums, and bongos, and Ron Crotty on bass. Let's step out into the set with You Stepped Out of a Dream.
Thank you.
The featured album this evening here on the Radio Thrift Shop, the Dave Brubeck Trio with Cal Chater. From the top we heard You Stepped Out of a Dream, I'll Remember April, Body and Soul, and Let's Fall in Love. This is DJ Frederick. You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop here on WSCS 90.9 FM in New London. Occasionally here on the Radio Thrift Shop, we hear a segment of Laura Erickson's On the Birds. And it's been a while, so here's a great opportunity to spend a few minutes with Laura here on the Radio Thrift Shop.
I've been hunkering at home for the duration, spending my time archiving old radio scripts and going through all my file drawers. Delving into these treasured old memories epitomizes soulfulness to me. Coincidentally, one of the For the Birds transcripts I unearthed this week from 1998 was about the difference between the spirit and the soul. I turned to nature to heal both spirit and soul. But how are the two different? My most spiritual moments come as I look up into the sky where my imagination places heaven. Snow-capped mountaintops climb to unreachable heights as inhospitable to human breath as the depths of the ocean. Clouds, wisps of crystallized water floating above the air, give shape and form to our dreams, our castles in the sky. The warm, glowing sun is achingly beautiful as it rises in the morning and sets at night. The luminous moon has such powerful gravitational force that it pulls even the ocean toward itself, giving us the tides. The uncountable stars are each their own sun, hot and gaseous, but so remote to look like glittering diamonds, cold and hard. All of this appeals to my spiritual need to rise above a situation, to slip the surly bonds of earth, to seek out such distant, lofty beauty. Birds in flight seem unfettered by the responsibilities and gravity that binds us to the earth. They fly easily at altitudes too high even for Sherpas, appealing to our spirit to come fly with them. Roger Torrey Peterson wrote, "Birds can fly where they want to, when they want to. So it seems to us who are earthbound, they symbolize a degree of freedom that we would nearly give our souls to have." Why would we need to give up our souls for that? I think it's because it is our souls that keep us rooted, responsible, down to earth. Ironically, birds are just as bound and shackled by instincts and physical needs as we are by responsibilities and heavy bodies. But being bound to earth is hardly a bad thing. As Robert Frost wrote, "Earth's the place for love. I don't know where it's likely to go better." Hermit thrushes may sing their ethereal, spiritually uplifting songs at cathedral heights, but they return to the earth that so richly matches their plumage to soulfully nourish their bodies and raise their babies. The most soulful moments I have come at the shores of rivers and lakes and the ocean. I can sit for hours mesmerized by the sparkling surface, hypnotized by the rhythm of the waves, searching into the unfathomable depths. A visit to the ocean is filled with soulful pleasures, finding starfish and conch shells and other treasures in tide pools, watching sanderlings scurry along the edges of the waves like tiny clockwork toys, seeing schools of fish suddenly appear and just as suddenly disappear back into the depths. Movement in water is slow and graceful, beautiful, yet entirely different from airy flight. Cold-blooded water animals are hard for us to connect to emotionally. Fish stare out with unblinking eyes that never look into our own. Yet warm-blooded aquatic animals, Dolphins and whales, seals and penguins, loons and otters, also warm and tender with their babies, their families, and sometimes even with us humans, seem soulful indeed. Even the most aerial gulls and terns, ethereal white against the blue sky beckoning to our spirits, come down to earth to raise their young with a tenderness that pleases our souls. From guardian angels with feathered wings to doves symbolizing peace, birds embody both the lofty heights to which we aspire and the down-to-earth devotion so satisfying to our souls. What else on the planet so perfectly intertwines soul and spirit together? I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.
This is Bird Note. It's basic black with an inelegant voice. It nests in places we rarely visit, and in relative obscurity. The rusty blackbird has suffered one of the most dramatic population declines ever recorded among our songbirds. Rusties breed in bogs, swamps, and other wetlands across Canada, and just barely into the northeastern U.S. We mostly encounter them northbound during March and April, and southbound in fall. But we're seeing far fewer. During half a century, as bald eagles and peregrine falcons recovered, rusty blackbird numbers plunged by an estimated 90%. Loss of swamps in the southeastern U.S., where they winter, probably explains part of the decline. Other causes might include mercury poisoning and the warming and drying of wetland breeding sites. It's also likely that we overlooked their decline. Blackbirds are generally abundant and resilient. They don't get the same attention we devote to gutsy falcons or vibrant warblers. If you'd like to help the rusties recover, begin at birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Support comes from Sasquatch Books, announcing Every Penguin in the World, a narrative and photographic book that chronicles a couple's quest to see every penguin species on the planet.
You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop with DJ Frederick. It's like having a radio time machine back to, say, 1973, to a backwater NPR station at 3 a.m. on a Saturday morning, when no one was listening except you and the crickets.
Thank you.
Michael Hayes with Orphans, and before that, Larry Bright and Sunbeam here on the Radio Thrift Shop. I'm DJ Frederick saying thank you for listening. That's going to do it for this edition of the Radio Thrift Shop. And in these dark and difficult times, remember, we need to embrace one another. We need one another to thrive and survive. Until next week, I'm wishing you many blessings.